Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our monthly Q&A show on The Big Interview. This time, we're changing things up a little bit. We have a new signing joining our team. I'm Neil White, and alongside myself and Graham Hunter today, we have Pete Jensen, who covers Spanish football for the Daily Mail and whose voice you may well recognise from your radio. Pete, welcome.
Glad to be here, Neil. Glad to be here, Graham.
Also, whoa. In the old Barnum and White, Bailey, you dumbed him down a little bit. He's the leading voice.
I can't be dumbed down, Graham. I'm undumbdownable.
On La Liga, you notice how I just let that one go. If you're tuning into La Liga, you're hearing from Pete the best commentary that there is going, and you're seeing his wit and wisdom in the Media Pro studios of La Liga Television, and you should be. Because it's all very well reading him in print, and as he's about to prove here, the audio visual version, that's just like, man, that's just like jelly and cream. But this is strawberry jelly, is what I'm saying.
Favourite jelly flavours coming up in part two, people. We've got quite a lot to get through before that. So let's start with socio Shane Hurley. Thank you for sending in your question, Shane. Hello, Graham and Pete, says Shane. About this time last season, Graham, I asked about the structure of Real Sociedad. Would they have the depth to push for the Champions League? Would they be able to hold on to players and build in the long run? It's been an excellent start from La Real. How do you guys think they'll continue the season? And is there money to invest in January? As I believe, says Shane, a striker to finish off some of these extra chances and turn draws to wins could be golden.
I think asking them to spend money in January is probably going to be a tall order, Shane. I don't think anyone's going to have any money, and I think a club that's put so much into its youth system and so much into the cantera is probably not going to go into the market unless William Jose throws another wobbly like he did, was it last January when he had half a foot in Tottenham. But they've got players like Lobetti and Roberto Lopez and Bautista who can give something if there's an injury. And if there's no injury to William Jose and there's no injury to Isak, then I think they'll go with that until the end of the season. They won't want to break. They won't want one of those two unhappy about suddenly not getting minutes because there's a third man in there. And as to your question about can they last the distance, well, Silva's injured, isn't he? So it's well timed, your question. So he's not going to play in the Europa League on Thursday. He's not going to play at the weekend. Well, he's a doubt for the weekend against Villarreal. So we're going to find a lot out. If he is missing from that game against Villarreal, how do they cope without him? I think they've got more than just him. And I think that's been a feature of them so far. They've got lots of tricks up their sleeve. Jan Uzay was brilliant on Sunday. First time he's put in a real shift, but he was absolutely off the scale. So they're going to...
For an extra from train spotting, isn't it? I mean, he's playing boy.
Good shout.
But he's also nicking the ball into the middle for Isak, isn't he? It's choose life, choose goals, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of the eternal promise, isn't he, Jan Uzay? And he's maybe never going to be the consistent player that everyone thought he was when he had five different teams. Was Scotland one of those teams that was claiming him? I know England was. Belgium, Albania, there were a few more, weren't there? But he doesn't necessarily...
Jan Uzay is a very Peterhead name.
Yeah.
So whether we wanted him or not, it's patently clear whoever he stars for, he is actually deep down.
Well, he's probably got Aberdeen links. Let's face it, everyone else has somewhere down the line.
It's a good early mention.
But he doesn't need to be that consistent this season. He just needs to play four or five brilliant games. Porter will do the rest. And yeah, I think they can last the distance. Win it, maybe not, but still be in it at the end of the season, I think.
What Pete said there, Shane, I think is I mean, you've got your opinion. You've said that you see chances going a-begging. I think that what's really important is that Porto was a really low scorer and finished that meltdown after lockdown, those 11 games, without goal or an assist. And suddenly he's prodigious with goals and assists and also enjoying himself and looking ultra quick and aggressive, either as an impact sub or the starter player. And then when he comes out, like, again, Pete, does it, maybe you knew, but because this subject about Gianni Zai is coming up a lot, I went back and looked. Does it surprise you that he hasn't played a game for Belgium in a year? And I think he's had about four starts for Belgium.
He's only had three starts for Real Sociedad, Graham.
There's something about this player that whenever you and I are in the studio, I don't know if the ex-pros are saying the same to you, as I've been witness to twice in the studio, once I've been watching the rest of the gang in the studio, and the ex-pros that work with us rave about him because he's that different player. He is two-footed. He's not an old-fashioned winger, but he loves to do the things that old-fashioned wingers would do naturally, which is like, hey, baby, it's me and you. I want to take you on and admit your afternoon shit. It might be a mirage, but it looks to me as if he's enjoying playing near Silva. Whether that's a, you know, steadying influence or a learning influence, I don't know. But you put Porto in the team, he performs. You put Gianni Zai in the team, he performs. And I would add to your point that, like, this is not as good as Iniesta, Xavi, Pedro, Puyol, Piqué, Valdez, Alba, but it's something close. And there's a clutch of maybe 8, 9 of them who are 18 to 24, all of whom are either local boys or who've come through Zubieta and therefore feel the badge. Imanol, you'll probably, I'm guessing, we haven't spoken about this, you'll have a similar feel to me in that, you know, Imanol would walk over broken glass for a week if it meant a point extra all season. That's what he feels about the club that he coaches. It's as if you were coaching Portsmouth, Neil was coaching Falkirk, I was coaching Aberdeen. It's that, I don't know what Shane's team is, Neil.
I think, I mean, it sounds to me like Shane has got an investment in this particular story.
In La Real. Well, look, all I'd say is, Imanol as a coach needs to have a lot more than that, but it's proving that he does, and that he's patently learned from whatever on the training ground led to the mental and physical freeze that they showed until the very last game when they managed to just sneak through into Europe. And he's got this clutch of footballers, whether it be Saldúa or Corozabal or Barnechea or, the captain Bigfoot, who Davy Moyes gave his debut to 5 years ago, exactly 5 years ago in November, Mikel Oyarzabal. Marino is a slightly different case, but who else have I? Saldúa I've mentioned, Zubeldia, Ian Muñoz for exactly. This clutch of about 8 or 9 of them are between 18 and 24. They play like a band of brothers. It really matters to them. And we've seen what can happen when you've got good players to whom the club really, really matters. And soon, you know, God willing, vaccine willing, all that kind of stuff, that brilliant stadium that they've renewed, that's now not got a running track, is eventually going to be full of fans. The queue is going to be around the block to fill that place up, to watch them play like they're playing. I didn't see what Shane saw, that they're lacking a lot of goal conversions. I think if you've got Isaac, William Jose, Oyarzabal, Porto contributing a decent amount of goals, and then some coming from Silva, Merino, the odd one or two presumably coming from Gianni Zai, the centre-backs now and again getting set plays. I think they've got a powerful enough array of strikers, unless, like you say, they do some trading. I really like the way that they're set up, and whether they win the title or not, which is a gigantic ask in terms of mentality, isn't it? I think learning to go the full course.
Mentality is going to be the big thing, isn't it? Because we've seen before in the run-ins, we've seen teams like Villarreal and Sevilla come close, and you just get that last 3 or 4 weeks of the season when it's almost as if, and this happens to the fans, not just the players, they start to think, you know what, we really shouldn't be winning the league. This is not what we're about. You know, that's for Barcelona and Madrid to do. And I think Silva is so tough mentally, and Monreal as well, and Marino. And I think that they might have that mental toughness if it comes down to it at the end of the season.
Their goals against ratio, not just the fact that they've only conceded, what is it, 4 in 10. If you go across the top four leagues, which I take to be England, Italy, Germany, France, plus Spain, top five, their goals against ratio beats everybody. Fucking Liverpool, Spurs, PSG, Bayern Munich, Juventus. It's extraordinary. Now, maybe it's not going to be like this forever, but I don't see that they've got in any of the back four or the keeper, Romero, two outstanding defensive guys who are like, you pinpoint, they're the rocks, and around them everybody's functioning. It seems to be a complete collective job right across the team. And their record at the moment, albeit with big tests to come against the other bigger sides, their record, and I'll close on my part, Pete may have more to say. I don't like the way that Villarreal frees against the big boys. And Sevilla last season, against the bigger competitors at the top of the league, I think they took 3 points out of a possible 18. I don't think Real Sociedad will do that. I think Real Sociedad have got the chops to take big points, whether it's 6 or 4 or whatever, against Real Madrid, who they've beaten recently in the Cup. Against, I think, if they catch Bus on a moderate day and La Real on a good day, I think La Real pump them. So,
Graham, you mentioned there the stadium and how that might fire up La Real even more. Pete, I'm wondering, is there anything that you're hearing that makes you think that this club have got something right about operating in these extraordinary circumstances? Because right across Europe, we're seeing some clubs overperform during this extraordinary session of football. And I wonder if La Real doing anything that might explain the start they've had.
Well, Graham mentioned Barcelona, and some people might have fallen out their chairs at that point and thought, well, way. They're not playing like Barcelona. And in fact, they are in patches so far this season. But I think the other likeness you can draw between them and Barca is this idea that they have about how they're going to play, and the thing about the youth teams playing the same way, and the fact that Xabi Alonso, I'm not sure now, but I know before the international break, Real Sociedad would be top of their league. Don't ask me what league it is, because the third tier of Spanish football has been reorganized in such a way that no one, including the players, understand
Segunda B, Group 4.
Yeah, something like that. But they were top after 3 games. They'd won all 3 games. So Xabi Alonso is there, waiting, you know, one day to take the job, and it may be that he goes somewhere else and then comes back. But in that sense, yeah, I mean, they are set up for this era we're now living in, when nobody, not even Barca and Madrid, can throw the money around.
And on that point, Neil, Zubieta is, if we're honest, is a relatively basic facility. I'm not being rude about it, but we are seeing the really elite clubs around Europe refresh their training grounds as much as they're refreshing their stadia. And when you go there, you can see it's not mend and make do, but it's largely as it's been for many decades. But I had the luck, through sponsors in UEFA, to interview Xabi Alonso last week. And without pretending that he said anything that splits the atom, one question about what's happening, and he talked about all the youth teams and his B team that Pete talked about, and the senior team mixing on that training ground. Okay, the fields are different, but they're broadly sharing the experience. The younger ones are looking up to Oyarzabal and Zaldúa and Zubeldia and whoever, Ayaramendi, whoever it might be, and going, look what they do, look at their timekeeping, look at how they practice, whether they do extra or not. Look, there's Xabi Alonso. There's Imanol. If you've grown up in the region, Imanol is a relatively legendary figure, at least in that region. And it's an environment where by osmosis, good habits are being bred. And I mention that because Xabi Alonso, who you both know, is a pretty tough nut. You don't see him getting all quivery and jelly-like about things. He's lived in a football family since he was a kid. His dad was a big star in the Basque Country and for Barcelona and Spain. And he was all of a quiver about there are several special generations there. And the idea of doing things right again and again and again in Zubieta. And having players like Oyarzabal saying, yeah, I got a massive offer to go to Athletic Bilbao and bollocks them. Not only am I not going, but I'm going to re-sign, I'm going to renew my contract, and I'm not going to put a buyout clause in because I don't want it. That things like that, that trickle down affects the academy and the attitude and the ambiente. What do you say, ambiente, Peter? The atmosphere. Yeah, okay. I think, anyway, there you go.
Next question from one of our long-term favourites, Diana Yao. Hi, Diana, how are you doing? Could this current La Liga season really be Atleti's, or are there reasons that it may not happen? Graham, let's start with you.
No, well, I'm convinced. I don't think that they're a shoo-in, but I'm convinced, A, that they can win the title, and I'm even more convinced that they should win the title. I'm hugely enamoured with their midfield. I don't think there's a... I mean, even Bayern... Well, if you're looking at a midfield whereby you've got... You want Saul not to be playing at left-back, and he's not. You kind of want him to be probably playing left-central midfield, and for my taste, you'd really like him to be playing next to Koke. In my opinion, not since the title, which they won in 2014, has Koke played better football. I'm absolutely... loving watching the responsibility that he's taken and the way in which his industriousness is married to really good use of the ball. I'm just loving it. I think Torreira into that midfield, it was unlucky that for, you know, the big win against Barcelona, which hadn't happened in 9 years of Cholo Simeone, that Torreira was absent due to COVID. It seems that he's another footballer who's asymptomatic and isn't suffering, so thank goodness for that. I think he can add some of the things they lost with Gabby. He's not as... You know, Gabby was an outright download, don't turn your back on him in a Friday night alleyway, because, you know, he was a dirty dog. But his football brain and his ability to galvanise others into giving more, they've missed that so much. And Torreira's got bits of that. Then you throw in Herrera, who I wasn't that enamoured of, and Pete was much more quickly than me, saw it. And his, I think, creative... He's a big rangy guy, a reasonably big rangy guy. His creative running into spaces, his passing, his ability to take on risks, his distribution adds a little bit of finesse, in my opinion. Then you're going Llorente, who, okay, will sometimes play off a striker, but is currently playing at right midfield, has proved to be bionic in terms of not only the kilometres that he covers, but his sprints and his ability to win and make goals out of shitty situations in the box. You give him a situation with his arse to goal, falling halfway to his right and 16 players around him, and he wriggles out of it as if he was made of jelly. It's like John Belushi, and he still comes out shouting toga, you know? And then, on top of that, stop me if you want, you've got Vitolo, who doesn't get a game, who will come on and run at people. You've got little Correa, who again can play second striker, but is largely an attacking midfielder, in my opinion. Carrasco, if you're a relatively normal wide defender or fullback in La Liga and you've got Carrasco the next night running at you, you're going to have to come out with brown shorts on. He's ultra technical. The nutmeg that he produced to put the ball through Ter Stegen's legs in the middle of the pitch on the run was Cruyff-esque. He's big and he'll knock you about. He'll score and make goals. He was Atleti's best player in a destruction in Bavaria against Bayern Munich. And then, just to go on all because the lady loved, swinging in out of the dark into the bedchamber is Jeffrey Big Old Boy Kondogbia, who is an utterly outstanding, commanding, win the ball, Patrick Vieira style, stride forward, knock it in a dangerous area and knock it into the goals from a distance midfielder. I probably missed about six.
Well, I'd elaborate on one of those and add one more name who's not a midfielder, but the one I'd elaborate on is Carrasco. First of all, I think we've looked at the goal at the weekend and too many people maybe have seen it just as a mistake. He's still got so much to do. The touch through the legs of Ter Stegen and to finish from the distance out that he finished, it was superb. And he's just come back a different player. If you people remember when he went to China, there seemed to be something maybe in his contract that said after 2 years Atleti had to sell him. So off he went. Of course, he scored the goal in the 2016 Champions League final. he was a good player. He was a good player. He couldn't defend. He didn't want to defend. And whether it was work playing for Rafa Benitez, I'm sure Rafa will be happy to take the credit for it. Whether it was that, whether it was going to China and having to be the most important player in that team. And I think the first season he had to keep them up. And then, you know, he was always the main guy. And he's admitted that he's come back maturer, more mature. And, you know, what he showed on Saturday was that, you know, he can play that wing-back role when Simeone wants to operate that system. And that brings me to the other name I was going to mention, which is Hermoso. Signed last season, lots of high expectation. Didn't really do it, but has just given Diego Simeone another option this season. He can play instead of Lodi, gives Trippier far more freedom to get forward, gives them still a three at the back when Trippier's out of position, and it's just made them a lot stronger at the back. And what they've got now is, as they showed at the weekend, you know, we can play this new way, and isn't it wonderful? But you know what? When we have to, we'll go back to the old way, and we'll play that way too. I don't think it's silly talk to say at the moment, after what we played, most teams have played 10 games, they of course haven't, they're the favourites.
Diana asks, guys, are there reasons that it may not happen? So if you had to, if we install them as favourites, what are the likely stumbling blocks? Is there one injury they can't?
At the end of last season, Oblak let the club know that he was really unimpressed with their lack of competitive ability at top trophy level, by which he meant La Liga and the Champions League. He wasn't impressed with the quality of signings, and that, you know, Griezmann had gone and that Lemar hadn't worked. And his attitude was that if they got the right money from Chelsea and Lampard at that stage, obviously Mondi wasn't on the radar. Kepa's goose was cooked months before with Frank Lampard and with Jody Morris. And nobody would cough up, because the club were absolutely resolute in saying it must be the buyout clause, which Diana will know all about. Memory tells me it was 120. Atleti needed to make 100 in general just to help them with their debt reparsing, which they haven't at the moment. And therefore, I'll come to my point. Oblak stayed. I think he's been as good as ever, without ever, not once needing to be exceptional this season. There was nothing he could do in Bavaria against Bayern. And that night, I thought I looked at a guy going, oh, is this it again? Here we go again. I'd imagine he doesn't feel like that right now, because in front of him, he's seeing what Pete talked about, his new style. There was a move in about the 6th, 7th, 8th minute where Barca were harassed by Correa into playing the ball long, give it away. And he played out from the back. And it was pass after pass after pass, some risks where they had to win it back. And broadly, they went from their own end of the pitch, pass, 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 space, start again, pass, pass, pass. And it ended with João Félix and Carrasco linking up to lay the ball off to Saul, and it was that brilliant top right corner save from Stegen. And it was very much what Pete talked about in the new cinema. So Oblak's must be looking out in front of all that and thinking, well, I'm glad I stayed. We've got a chance of winning the title. It doesn't look as if we're good enough to win the Champions League. But turn it on its head. What if Oblak said halfway through the season, I'm leaving, got disaffected, please let it not happen, gets injured. They have a couple of untested goalkeepers, but Oblak on his day, if you don't ask about his distribution or quick when you're being pressed and you want to play five passes around the six-yard box, that's not where he's best. If you're talking about being under bombardment, on his day Oblak can argue about being the best goalkeeper in the world. Now, they don't have, and it's very rare that you've got a backup keeper who's not as good as that, but who's an acceptable replica, like it was with Stegen and Bravo when Barca won a treble. So there's an Achilles heel. They're so reliant on him that they need this Slovakian giant who's just, I think, exceptional and underrated, because the mode is about, look what Alisson does, look what Ederson does, look what Stegen does. That's the mode at the moment. Oblak, in his own way, is utterly exceptional. And I think that's a little bit of a problem. And the big deal then, sorry, Peter, I'll hand back to you, is that Suarez needs to contribute well. I think 15 good goals rather than 25. 15 goals that really count in big matches. Now we're only talking about the league and not Europe. That needs to happen, because I think they might be a little light for a title-winning attack line, unless Luis Suarez does what we all think he's capable of. And I hope he does. I hope he does for him, for Atleti, and also to stick it right up Football Club Barcelona.
If they're the Achilles heels, then I think they're going to be fine. I think, I don't want to jinx him, but he's old school, isn't he, O'Black? You remember when goalkeepers never used to get injured? They used to play cup finals with broken collarbones and things like that. And he's a little bit like that. And I think Suarez will deliver. I'd say maybe right back. Trippier doesn't seem to have a substitute. And that was proving a problem earlier in the season. But he's got his mojo back now, and he was good again at the weekend. But they look very, very complete. And as Graham touched on earlier, to be able to bring in Condogbia and Torreira in the window, albeit upset about losing Partey, but in a way getting two players who are more suitable for the position that they were trying to make Partey play last season. They're better than last season. There's more to them. And I don't see too many weaknesses.
I think it's almost as if they've traded up. So, you know, Diana, Pete, you don't know Diana as well as we do, because she's been with us as a contributor and a socio for years. And she knows her football really, really well. So the question was sharp. I think she probably knew that I fancied Atleti. And also, I'll close by saying, I think the onus is on them to win the title. This isn't the time to speak about Barcelona and Real Madrid, but both of them have got significant problems. And just like we were all saying before the Barca game, because anybody who doesn't know, it had been, I don't know how many games, 18 games or 9 years, Simeone's Atleti had never beaten Barcelona in the league. And you're looking at Barcelona going into that game, you say, well, if not now, when? And I think it's the same with the title. I think they're ready. I think they've got a better squad. I think institutionally they've got less rocks to crash into. The fact that they've got debt to service was negated by the fact that they could spend money on Condogbia. So my answer in summary, Diana, is, and it's clear that Pete's got at least as strong a view as me, is that not only do I think that they are really credible title challengers, I think the onus is on them to prove between now and May that they can and they will win the title. This is their year. This is their season.
Just the last point also, Diana, you'll know that the more that Simeone says one game at a time, the more he believes that they can win it. And he's now giving that answer to questions that are not even about the title race. So, you know, he knows.
Thanks for the question, Diana. Guys, we're going to take a break now. We'll be back very soon with more of your questions.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And we're back with more of your questions. Let's hear from one of our socios who sent in their question. Tom Lee, you're up.
Hola, Graham, Pete. Socio Tom Lee here. Short and sweet. Great season so far. I know they've played odd amounts of games, but the top five is in itself magnificently entertaining. Real Sociedad, Atletico Madrid, Villarreal and Cadiz all featuring at this early stage. I know they've played odd amounts of games, etc. Can the status quo continue? Predictions, please, gentlemen. Real Sociedad would be welcome champions. Atletico, maybe for the first time in 7 years. Graham, you were talking up Sevilla before the season began. Who do you think and why, please?
Tip-top Tom's tips. Tom, for any of the socios who don't recognise him, and you should, is a real authority on particularly football and horse racing, and he was our conduit to an excellent big interview with Paul Robinson. I did talk Sevilla up, Tom, and I don't regret it, because I think that they have got not only an arch squad builder in Monchi, but I think they've got Monchi on form. I think if you look at the composition of this squad, although it's patently obvious that had they been able to keep Reguilón, it would have been good for them. Acuña, I think, is going to gradually be powerful and be another relative Monchi success. And Escudero is beginning to find the form that made him an absolute must in the team every week under previous managers when Sevilla was successful. That's a little bit micro. Across the squad, I really like their composition, their mix of abilities, their mentality as a group. I think that even given all of Monchi's successes, two guys in this jigsaw stick out. Julian Lopetegui, for me, it remains something of an acquired taste. Having met him, I'm not convinced he's the brightest man to walk Homo erectus on this planet. And as a football coach, I was worried a little bit that he was a man out of time, slightly. And yet, you watch him changing footballers in this squad. I think he's had a really big beneficial effect on Suso, for sure, Munir, for sure. And that links me back to the other, because he's had a big impact on this guy. The other massive Munchi success that adds luster to the idea that maybe Sevilla aren't going to win title. They're not going to be kings of Spain, but they might be kingmakers, because I think they'll take big points off the other big teams in the top five, top six, which they didn't do last season. I think they're equipped to now. It's Koundé. Koundé came in from Bordeaux. I think Pete and I think you and I were in the same show, the Wednesday La Liga show, Pete, when Gus Poyet was saying, I had that kid at Bordeaux. Look out for him. He's a little bit rangy. He's a bit mad. He goes for a wander. You can't stop him. And at that stage, I think he was probably about 19 or something. 18 when Gus had him. Maybe 19-ish when he came in. Maybe 20. Koundé took a minute or two to find the pace, to find the responsibility. And it very much helps him that he's in a partnership. I think one of the best centre-half partnerships in Europe. If you look at them pound for pound. He's also extraordinary. He's a player who I think has played 48 times for Sevilla in all competitions since joining, and he's 21 or 20 or 22. He's had 5 defeats. In the 12 games since he signed that Sevilla have played without Koundé, I don't think it's a coincidence, they've been beaten 6 times. As soon as he dropped out of the squad in this La Liga campaign, and it isn't simply about his defence, his ball carrying, his athleticism, even though he's not a giant, the power per packet is huge. He's patently and utterly effervescent character. He's confirmed recently the stories that Manchester City came in for him when they couldn't get Jimenez. Sevilla said, no, you ain't getting him before we played Bayern in the Super Cup. The market was then closing. They'd got Diaz from Portugal on the hook, so they went and did it. So the short answer about why they won't be champs, Tom, is that they, even though there are goals dribbling in from Munir, maybe, and Nasiri, and maybe one or two from Suso and Navas, and one or two from the midfield, De Jong isn't going to get you the 19, 20, 21, 22 goals that you need to win the title from your striker. He just isn't. He's better. You can see more this season what he did at PSV and why Monchi bought him, but they needed another striker. You know, they needed to get... Who's the kid that went to Monaco that I absolutely... Ben Yedder or Gamero they've had, or
Ubaka. You know, they needed a jack in the box like that to be champion, in my opinion. But I think that they are better. It's the most I've liked Lopetegui's work. They're doing all of this. Pete, I'm going to hand, and I promised to hand sooner, but of all the teams in Spain that lose because of no crowds, you'd put Athletic and Sevilla somewhere near the top. They're doing what they've done without crowds. I think it's remarkable. Tom, I'll hand to Pete, just saying, I tell you something, I'm enjoying Sevilla a lot now.
Yeah, I'm not quite as optimistic as Graham, Tom. I think it's going to be slightly tougher this season for them. I think they were so much about the fullbacks last season, and Navas was so brilliant. How much longer can he go on being brilliant? You know, what is he now, 46 years old? He's a freak of nature. But and obviously on the other side, Reguilón, and I think Acuña's it's a tough job to take over from Reguilón. Absolutely agree about Koundé, and was surprised that Manchester City stopped at €55 million, because I think he's a Pep Guardiola centre-back 100% through and through. So they did well keeping hold of him. Rakitic, is it going to work out? Let's hope so. We all love Rakitic. But Ever Banega's a big miss as well. So not to talk for too long, because Graham's spoken about Sevilla, but I think it's going to be very difficult for them this season to be in that title race. And, you know, it's going to be a struggle to get in the top four, because there are at least five teams who have got a very good chance of finishing top four this season.
The top four is going to be Real Sociedad, Sevilla, Atleti and Real Madrid. Now, we'll go to details on that because, you know, later on in the show, there's a very specific question about it. But Sevilla will be top four. I mean, I'm not I'm wise enough not to challenge Pete on things that he says with certainty. And there's many have slipped between cup and lip, because it's going to drain them to be consistently playing against better quality teams in the Champions League than they did in the Europa League. But I feel very strongly about them. And I think they've got two good goalkeepers now. They are what I was reaching for. You know, I think Vacilic needs to be the number one, but Bono has proved himself to be exceptional. I like them a lot. I think they're a top four candidate, and I agree with you, they're not going to be title winners, but I feel a power is rising in the South again, and Spanish football needs that. That's why I'm a little bit excited about them.
Pete, there was a discontented noise amidst that. I don't know if you were dissenting against an inclusion or an exclusion in Graham's list.
No, I'm just wondering, you forgot about someone, didn't you, Graham, when you said those four?
No, the Dandies play in the Scottish Premier League. And we'll be fine. And if you're talking about Villarreal, I'll tell you why they won't be the one that you can complain about. Because as much as Unai Emery is making Villarreal, you know, stronger, and he's bottled it in the three big games, at Camp Nou, where they were atrocious, away to Atleti, where they could have gone for the win and just decided to tuck in at 0-0, and at home to Real Madrid at the weekend, where it was like, you know, Cadiz took advantage of Real Madrid coming off the back of an international week with players missing, and Unai Emery took to within 25 minutes of the tape and losing 1-0 to put on Estupiñán, to put on Chukwueze, to eventually, okay, Jeremy got his minutes, but Taki. Maybe I'm asking for too much too quickly, and Unai has a track record in Spain that you'd be very foolish to bitch about. But what I want, I'm not being critical of him, I want more, and he's got the resources, and I think he's being overly cautious, and I don't like that, and I think it'll cost them top four.
Yeah, agree. Beating Madrid at the weekend, shooting fish in a barrel, which is, as Graham always tells me, is how Hitchcock started.
I love Joni Mitchell at Fishstock. She was brilliant. She couldn't make it to Woodstock, but she went to Fishstock.
And by the way, how did Zidane get away with turning the narrative of that game at the weekend around to make it seem like Madrid had missed an opportunity to beat Villarreal? It was completely the other way around. Yeah, too cautious, Emery, and hopefully he'll change through the season. And, you know, criminal underuse of Kubo, which he will pay for in January by Kubo saying goodbye, farewell, adios, if he doesn't start making better use of him. And who else is up there? Well, Granada have had a terrific start to the season, but obviously you are asking too much if we're going to talk about them, you know, at the top table, but they've done very well.
This is probably the deepest we've ever gone in a Q&A episode before we properly get to either Barcelona or Real Madrid. So there's three questions I'm going to tie together.
have at them as you will. First of all, hello to Martin Seabright, who I don't think we've heard from before, so thank you very much for getting involved, who says, "Hola, Graham and Pete. Despite other super clubs having the benefit of money from billionaire owners or oil-rich nations, Real Madrid and Barcelona have always felt like the ultimate giants of world football, with finances and pulling power to attract the great players. However, are we witnessing a transitional period for them both, or signs of a poignant shift in their status? Our wonderful sponsors, Bet365, ask, will either Barcelona or Real Madrid fail to finish in the top four? Graham Hunter has already given his verdict there, but we can revisit that in more detail now. And finally, David Beaton, who I don't think is the same David Beaton that played for Fork Football Club in the 1980s, says, will Barcelona finish in the top four?
Yeah, in terms of Football Club Barcelona, I think it might be. Because I think that... that's not just a little white, icy, pointed tip that the ship's sailing towards. There's a big fucking iceberg underneath. Maybe this comes out a greater length, and none of us can do full bio tapestry on what's going wrong at Barcelona or how bad it's going to get. But not since I moved over here, and I don't know when you moved to Spain, Pete. I think it's at or around the same time, but I moved here in 2002, and the club was moribund. It was going in the wrong direction. It was full of people at directorial, administrative and playing level who weren't good enough. The fans had lost interest. The average crowd was just around 60,000, not the 90-something thousand it was under Guardiola. People forget that Barcelona have had desperately hard times before. They went 6 years without a trophy when Laporta won those elections in, which I guess maybe were 2003. I know Cruyff's son-in-law, Todd Bean, was the one who confirmed to me that they were running out of money to pay the administrative staff, the non-playing staff. And I think the club is more than there again. I think that the social mass has fallen out of love with the club, and the Catalans are like that. I think that because the blizzard of news media throws stuff at us constantly so that we're almost snowblind, we're talking about a squad which is proud, replete until their trouser belt is bursting with trophies and personal wealth and self-belief, and the club, which doesn't have a board or a president, at least until January, they've got an interim administrator, they're trying to ask them to reduce the salary count by a minimum of about 190 million euros. There was a day when you and I were reporting, all three of us were reporting, whereby, okay, squeeze that down percentage-wise to Spurs or Stoke or Falkirk or Aberdeen or Rangers, where percentage-wise, if you went like for like, pound for pound, it would have been earth-shattering. People don't talk about it now. The players are sitting hearing Messi, particularly in the recent weeks, going, I'm out of here. They're looking at other sides still continuously able to beat them if they try harder and run harder. It is not all doom and gloom. The performance in Turin against a very poor Juventus, was historic. There will be people, just like there'll be people now with moist eyes looking back to Van Gaal taking Barca to Bruges and giving a debut to several players who didn't make it, but giving a debut to Iniesta. And there'll be people doing that in 6, 7, 8 years about the season when Ansu super confirmed himself, when Pedri was signed, when Trincao made his debut, when Dest made his debut, when Frankie de Jong grew up a little bit, all that kind of stuff. That will happen. But right now, institutionally, in terms of the fans, in terms of their losses, and in terms of what it's going to take from a new board and a new manager after Koeman is gone, which will be guaranteed at the end of the season, if he lasts that long, and I hope he does. I agree with Pete. I think on a training ground, I think he's made a noticeable difference. I think it's horrible the way that he doesn't change games well enough in-game, but he has made a big difference. It's light years from Setién. But this monolithic, gigantic behemoth is steered for the rocks, and there will be no 2008 click. Suddenly everybody wakes up because a new messianic leader comes in. It isn't going to happen. Institutionally and in sporting terms, Barcelona are in a rank rotten state, and it corrodes. So
I have, you know, it'd be stupid with all the talent in our squad to say that they can't play for top four football. Of course they can. But I said on the first day of the season, zero chance of the title. And I now think that there are opportunities to stay in the top four. I think that will be an achievement. If they're top four and Koeman walks away having given them the revenue, never mind the pride of top four, they have to be top four. It's as important as when Rivaldo scored that hat-trick culminating in an overhead kick against Valencia. When at the time, people all talk about the overhead kick, Pete, don't they? But at the time, it was like, get us into the Champions League or this club's in deep shit. Neil, I think they're back there again and some.
Martin's asking a pretty interesting question, which is, do any of these shifts smell like sort of a generational, almost semi-permanent change?
Well, in reverse order, in answer to David's question, yes, Barcelona will finish in the top four. I think Sevilla will be the ones that miss out. I agree with the theory that Graham's already touched on and is going to elaborate on, that they are going to have a disastrous season. But I can't see them not finishing the top four. I've got faith in Koeman. I've got faith that Koeman will sort it out. PK is going to be a massive miss. They will have to do something in January. They will have to do something. I don't know who they're going to talk to. Morgan Freeman, Morgan Stanley, Nicky Morgan. Something will have to happen if the worst case scenario is going to be that, you know, it's going to turn out that he's out for pretty much the whole season. He's so important to them. You know, at some point, Messi is going to, you know, plug himself in somewhere and, you know, get that shock through his body and through his system. And maybe Koeman's already hit on the answer, which is not to take him to places like Ukraine in the Champions League when, you know, you're probably Champions League through already.
And Pete, just briefly on Madrid, by comparison, let's not turn a drama into a crisis, but things don't seem to be going quite to plan at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, and getting back to Martin's question, of course things are shifting because you've got these two clubs so reliant on football tourism, and football tourism is obliterated, and that will last. You know, that will clock up 12 months for sure of that being the case. So it's bound to take an effect. But you would also say that there will be a recovery at some point. And that just because Getafe are laughing at the moment because, you know, most of their money comes from the TV deal and very little of it from gate receipts and football tourism, you know, when things get back to normal, as it were, as normal as they're ever going to be again, Barcelona and Madrid will take advantage of that and the smaller clubs won't. And in terms of on the pitch, they don't inspire me, they don't excite me, but they have this remarkable capacity, which Barcelona don't seem to have, of taking things from games where you know, they shouldn't really do that, and they did it at the weekend against Villarreal.
Okay guys, that's it for part one. More on Monday when Graham and Pete will talk Barcelona, the Premier League title race, and Scotland's return to the international top table for the first time since I don't know when. For now, thank you Peter, thank you Graham, and thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.